Here at Late Night Live over the last year, we've been examining, predator by predator, the carnage caused by animals Europeans brought to Australia. It's a strange fascination. Rabbits and deer are already accounted for, cats are still to come, but now foxes. They drive extinctions by killing about 300 million native animals a year. Joining me from West Australia is Dr. Sean Tomlinson from the School of Molecular and Life Sciences at Curtin University, an expert on the fox in Australia. Sean, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here.
They're scary little bastards, aren't they? I remember walking through London a few years ago on a hot summer night, and suddenly there was a fox in front of me. It's really shocking.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, the whole scary thing. Every time I've encountered them, I've been surprised at how personable they are, because in all of my work, they are the big evil. Them and feral cats are the big sort of drivers of all of the extinctions that I've ever read about and looked at in my professional work. And yet, you know, they're such kind of shy and self-effacing creatures.
Really?
In real life. Yeah. And it's always surprised me that, especially when I see them in places where they're supposed to be, that they invoke in me this kind of irrational sense of hatred. I have to remind myself when I see them in the UK that they actually belong here.
Yes, yes. They're not a problem so much there, but here. Mm. Hey, do they smell? Do foxes have a smell? Don't we talk about somebody being foxy, meaning they stink?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if that's the association with people. I've always used the term foxy in a very different sense, but yeah.
Ah, yes, people, there is that sense, yes.
Yes, the people that do work with them quite a lot very much are aware of the smell of particularly fox urine, and fox urine is used a lot in kind of predator aversion training and things like that. It is a very distinctive and quite a powerful odor.
And look, they're about as big as a dog, as big as a big dog, but bonier.
Look, in my experience, a little bit smaller. I mean, certainly in my corner of the world, I ran into a fox camping only a couple of months ago in semi-arid Western Australia, and it would have been a little bit smaller than a kelpie. So they're not big, but they're, you know, cunning as a fox is a very real term. And I think that's how they have such an impact on our native wildlife, because, you know, they will very much sit and plan and prey upon such a wide variety of things.
Let's go back to the sad origin story. So as with rabbits, foxes are introduced in the western districts of Victoria with some sort of notion that it's going to make the landscape more English and we might even go fox hunting. Was that the motive for bringing them?
Certainly. The understanding is that they were introduced to three properties around Werribee and Corio near Geelong by homesick British aristocrats who wanted to go fox hunting. And it was by no means the first attempt. There had been multiple attempts to introduce foxes before they stuck, but always for the single goal of putting on the red jacket and climbing on the horse and chasing foxes around the country.
It's really fascinating that this is the same area where rabbits were released for hunting. Mm. And rabbits had come to Australia with the first fleet. They were rabbits for eating. No problem whatever. But wild rabbits from Britain were brought to this district in Victoria and released for hunting. Boom, the rabbit plague. And the same with foxes.
Yeah, in fact, of the three big introductions being cats, foxes and rabbits, it seems like cats were the only ones that kind of escaped by accident. We very much deliberately let rabbits and foxes go for human recreation.
Sean, we're going to be coming back to you on the subject of cats. There is an enormous amount of pressure on me at the ABC not to pursue wild, feral, dangerous, nasty cats, because there are cat lovers in here. This is just between you and me. There are cat lovers in the ABC. So we're coming back to cats. But the foxes, Your modelling shows how extraordinarily quickly they spread.
Yeah, and I guess now that we're getting down to it, it's understanding that that speed of spread that really drove this whole project. Because while I'm now at Curtin University, I began this work when I was still employed at the Environment Institute at the University of Adelaide, as part of a larger project that is ongoing over there. And that focus really is understanding what the drivers were for the decline of native mammals across Australia. And of course, you can't understand how native mammals have declined without understanding how the threatening processes have spread across space and through time. And that's the thing that really surprised us, is we had expected that we would have models showing foxes spreading across the country. And what we hadn't expected was that after time of release, they would colonize the entire southeast corner within 30 years. And although their spread slowed across the arid zone, they still managed to cross the entire continent within 60 years. So,
Sean, how did they do that? Did they hitch a ride on trucks, or was there some way they got across, or do they have truly remarkable capacity for endurance?
No, look, we have a very British understanding of foxes. You know, they live in our kind of popular zeitgeist as, you know, Fantastic Mr. Fox from Roald Dahl, and all of those Christmas cards you see of snowy landscapes and red foxes. But actually, in their natal range across Europe, they inhabit a huge diversity of landscapes right into very arid regions of the Middle East. And so the diversity of environments that they encounter in Australia is really no challenge to them whatsoever. Some of the fascinating things that emerged from our work is we modeled their spread by essentially building population demographic models, so births, deaths, and marriages over space and over time. And what we found in the arid zone was that on average, they have quite a low reproductive rate, but with very large rapid spikes. And of course, that matches the natural boom and bust ecosystem.
Oh, so when it rains, we get foxes.
When it rains, you get lots and lots of foxes. And then the juveniles just spread out looking for a new place to den. And that really is the limiting factor, is density of denning sites. So they would have spread across the arid zone in bursts, but in quite large jumps, because denning sites are much more spread out in arid ecosystems than in more mesic, wetter ecosystems. And they're also much more concentrated in ecosystems and landscapes that we have modified. So once we started opening the landscape to agriculture, you know, foxes just said, "You beauty, we'll go nuts here." And all of our population jumps happened very closely coinciding with agricultural expansion.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Dr. Sean Tomlinson about the spread of foxes in Australia. Sean, is the fact that Tasmania doesn't have foxes the result of a careful understanding not to repeat the mistakes of the mainland, or is it just good fortune?
Look, let's say both. Foxes never got to Tasmania naturally. For reasons I admit I don't understand, in the early part of colonial Australia, they were just never introduced to Tasmania. But there have been subsequent introductions of foxes to Tasmania through good fortune, and I think through the presence of native predators that are not present on the mainland. Foxes don't take very well in Tasmania, and I believe the latest effort to introduce them was by some anonymous collection of people in the early 21st century. And conservation agencies in Tasmania jumped on that very, very quickly, because we do not want foxes in the last holdout of some of our iconic Australian native species.
Sean, how do you get these extraordinary figures? Foxes kill about 300 million native animals every year, 88 million reptiles, 111 million birds, 107 million mammals. How do you get those figures?
the actual predation effort by foxes comes from a lot of hard work, principally from colleagues up in Darwin, at Charles Darwin Uni, who have spent an awful lot of time looking at the contents of fox stomachs, the contents of fox scats, and basically just going through and saying, well, this is how many animals and this is what kind of diversity there were in individual fox stomachs, and then scaling up.
Yep, yep. I'm surprised there's any native animal left alive, what with, you know, we'll get to cats later down the track, as I say, Sean, but those are huge numbers. What are the native species most at danger from foxes? Have foxes actually pressed any to extinction?
There's no question that foxes and cats have presented a huge conservation threat to Australia's native species, and it has led to a really sad situation where Australia has the highest extinction rate of mammals in the world. For example, 35 native mammals have gone extinct since European colonization. As to whether foxes and cats were the only driver or even the primary driver, that really is a difficult question because, as I've already said, fox populations correlate incredibly well with landscape modification, so land use conversion to agriculture, and that obviously destroys native animal habitat. So native animals suffer when we turn woodlands into wheat fields. Native animals probably also suffer because wheat field landscapes have higher densities of foxes, which then prey more heavily on native animals. And we also have changed fire history throughout all of these landscapes right across Australia. So that really is at the nub of what the Environment Institute's ongoing research program is about, is once we understand how foxes have spread across the landscape and how land use was converted from native vegetation into agriculture and how we changed fire and all of these things, then we can really start unraveling which one of these things was the most powerful contributor. And it's not always the same for every species. So some of our preliminary work with numbats strongly suggests differential pressures of cats, foxes, and land use change. But primarily, we really don't know which of these three major drivers causes extinction and endangerment for different species.
Sean, a last question. Is there really any prospect of getting rid of foxes?
Sadly, I suspect no. One of the best things that we can hope to do is knock them down to the lowest densities possible. And certainly there are some fantastic initiatives doing that at scale across Australia. Started actually here in Western Australia by DBCA, I believe, in Operation Foxglove, which then turned into Western Shield.
What's DBCA?
The Department of Biodiversity, Conservation and Attractions over here in Western Australia. Basing for foxes at landscape scales. Now that does have benefits, but it cannot eradicate foxes. And I think some of the best things that we can do other than that is the establishment of predator exclusion fences at large scales, the way the Australian Wildlife Conservancy has done, where they can eradicate foxes inside those fences.
And cats.
And then either reintroduce native species or to allow native populations to grow back, recover in those fences. And certainly there's very good track record of that in Australia and also over in New Zealand with their mainland island sanctuaries.
But we were talking the other day to some New Zealanders about their mission and their belief that they can get zero invasive species by 2050. But we can't look to anything like that in Australia.
Look, it's a very ambitious program that they've set over in New Zealand. And look, if anyone can do it, it's the Kiwis, because they do have just a phenomenal track record of wildlife conservation over there. But they're also a very small land area. The invasions and the invasive species they have are also smaller and somewhat easier to control. Foxes are difficult to control, and especially at the kinds of scales that we're talking about in Australia.
And they don't have foxes, do they?
I don't believe so, but don't quote me because I haven't spent a lot of time looking at foxes in New Zealand. I'm pretty sure their main concern is stoats and hedgehogs. Yeah.
Yep. But look, back to us. Sean, thanks for joining us on Late Night Live. I'm looking forward very much to our discussion on cats and the political problems of dealing with cats, because there's no political problems dealing with foxes, are there? Nobody's got pet foxes, have they?
Nobody seems to have much of an issue with controlling foxes. In fact, a lot of the conversations I've been having since the production of this work has been about getting greater buy-in from people to be able to go out and shoot foxes themselves as pest, you know, citizen pest control. But cats is a totally different question.
Totally different question. Totally different story. We'll do it later down the track. Sean, just describe for me exactly what the work is that you're doing and what it's aiming to achieve.
This work particularly was built out of a program spearheaded by Damien Fordham at the University of Adelaide. And his group is continuing to focus on principally the consequences of fox and cat invasion in Australia and what that means for native mammal conservation and recovery, particularly trying to understand places in Australia where foxes have been on the country for the least amount of time and at the lowest densities, precisely for directing conservation money to where it's best likely to have an outcome. And that includes everything from fox control to wild species recovery, rewilding, feral exclusion fences, all of these expensive things that have to be directed very carefully, precisely because they are so expensive. My interest since returning to Western Australia runs very much parallel to that, but I'm developing a strong interest in what this means for Australia's birds, because I firmly believe that bird conservation is potentially even more complex than mammal conservation, but it's driven by all of the same threatening processes. So if we can understand it and apply it to mammals, I believe we can also apply it to birds.
Thanks for giving us some time. I've been talking to Sean Tomlinson, a lecturer in the School of Molecular and Life Sciences at Curtin University.